Hello everyone and welcome to another brilliant sport and lifestyle biz here on your Real Feel Good Radio, UK Health Radio. Well, we've got a fabulous show, the first one of September. We start off today with Sean Conway, part one of Sean the Adventurer Extraordinaire, taking out 105 Ironman Challenge distances in 105 days. Brilliant, an amazing part one. That's a bit of a teaser for the full interview coming soon. Then we have Holly Mile, who had part one last week. We've got the full interview with Holly this week. Moving on to Claire Stanicliffe, captain of England's women's deaf football team, talking about how they're going to Malaysia for the World Cup and how they had to raise the money themselves. And we finish off with former children's TV presenter and author Connie Hutt about how to train your children about the value of money. Throw in our SLB Sports Roundup and we know you're going to love the show. Well, everybody, today I'm joined by, for me, a real superstar and an inspiration to many. He's become the new world record holder for daily Ironman distance triathlons. He set his new record at 105. It's the amazing Sean Conway. Hi, Sean. How are you?
Hello, mate. I'm pretty exhausted, if I'm honest, and I'm glad that's over.
I imagine that you are, and to have the energy to probably go through not only mine, but many interviews over the last couple of days to celebrate what an achievement. We've said you've done 105. The previous record was 101, I believe, and you've broken that.
Yeah, James Lawrence set the record at 101 a couple of years ago, and I remember just being captivated by his journey, and I was really inspired, and I sort of got me thinking. I was like, I wonder if I could do that, and then sort of thought, there's no chance. And then, you know, I thought, actually, maybe I could do it. So yeah, I started on the 10th of April after a failed attempt last year. So I attempted this in July last year and fell off the bike and got an injury. So I went back to the drawing board and, yeah, as I said, started on 10th of April and only finished 5 days ago. I remember thinking at the 10th of April that the 20th of July was a long, long, long way away.
Obviously, an Ironman distance is an unbelievable achievement. But you've literally done 105 in 105 days. I just want to reiterate that. It's consecutive days. But why are we taking that achievement? Just tell us what you do during this Ironman distance and the actual distance that you do every day.
Yeah, to do a full Iron Distance triathlon, you've got to do a 2.4-mile swim. And it has to be in this order. So you've got to do the swim first, and then you go straight into 112 miles on the bike. And then you finish off with a marathon 26.2-mile run at the end. And you've got to do that within 17 hours every day. That's sort of the cutoff. If you're slower than that, it's sort of game over. And to be honest, you can't be anywhere near the 17 hours. You really have to be around 14, 15 hours to make it sustainable. And luckily I was, you know.
Yeah.
But though it was close, I think on day two, I was only 5 minutes off the 17-hour cutoff. So that was a worry, and I started to doubt my physical ability. Yeah. In my head, I knew I could do it.
Yes.
I had to know it. I had to believe it. Like, you can't have any negative thoughts, but sometimes your body can let you down no matter how strong your head is, you know. So
yeah,
it was a worry at the beginning, but yeah, slowly sort of clawed back some time and eventually got into a bit of a rhythm around day 30 and managed to sort of hold out the sort of the good enough pace to allow me to get good sleep. You know, once I started getting good sleep, that's when I knew it was sort of in the bag. Sort of falsely thought that, even though it ended up being way tougher. You know, it was never in the bag, but in my head I had to believe it.
I mean, look, I can imagine. I mean, they always say one of the biggest parts of sport is recovery as well, to get your body fresh. But what tremendous mental strength that must have taken. I'm not saying this in any disrespectful way at all, because I can't imagine even doing one of them. But for you to be that close to the time limit on day two of 105, it shows tremendous character and belief and mental strength to actually get back on the horse, as it were.
Yeah, for me, it was like, it's not over till it's over. So, you know, I thought, right, all I need to do is do 5 minutes quicker tomorrow. And I did. I think I might have even been 10 minutes quicker on day three, and then another 5 minutes quicker. You know, slowly, once that graph was sort of, you know, getting better, as it were, so my times were getting quicker, then that kind of got me through the hard bits. Because had I started on 15 hours and then every day I was 5 minutes slower,
yes,
then that would have been tough to deal with. But I sort of started off at a good pace on day one and then just totally cooked it on day two. I had terrible weather. There was headwinds. It was pouring with rain. It was freezing cold. I had a couple of knee issues, so that was slowing me down. So my run was super slow. So I went from sort of an okay pace to a terrible pace.
But
then every day from then on got a little bit quicker. And then, you know, that at least gave me the confidence that, well, if I was 5 minutes quicker today, maybe I can be 5 minutes quicker tomorrow. And that's how I got through it, really. And also just getting up every day was a non-negotiable in my head.
Yes.
You know, I sort of put it in the same brackets as brushing your teeth. We all brush our teeth. We don't question it. It's just something we do. And that was the same, you know, I put them in the same category. You know, so getting up at 4:29 every morning to get in the pool before 5 a.m., if I could get in at 4:59, that was a win for the day. And everything I did was a non-negotiable. It just, I had to do it. Otherwise, as soon as you open that little door, that sliver of light going, oh, well, do I? You're going to throw in the towel at some point. So that was sort of my strategy. Well, it worked in the end.
You bring up a really great point about the time, but you also lead me into my next question. But we'll go back to the time for now. The fact you went to nearly 17 hours and were 5 minutes quicker every day, or enough quicker every day, it might have been more, it might have been less at times.
Yeah.
That put you in a positive mindset. But if you just started off at 15 hours and got slower, it sort of puts you in a more negative mindset, because you can almost see progression, can't you, if you're getting quicker?
Absolutely. And I called it the hustle. You know, I was like hustling for minutes. And actually that gave me something to focus my energy away from just being miserable and cold and tired and hungry and in pain, especially because in North Wales, April was horrendous for the weather. I mean, it had snowed just 2 weeks before the start, and then it was freezing cold and big wind and rain. So, you know, had I not been able to focus my energies on something else, I could have probably quite easily spiraled both physically and mentally, I think, down the wrong path. Whereas, you know, every day we sort of celebrated like, yeah, I was 5 minutes quicker or 10 minutes quicker or 15 minutes quicker. And, you know, and it hovered, you know, sometimes I was then 5 minutes slower, but at least the general graph was in the right direction. And that sort of kept my mind in a positive attitude going, right, well, I could potentially do a 13 hour, you know, potentially, who knows?
And
the excitement of that. I mean, I never did a 13 hour, but at least in my head, I was like, oh, maybe that could be my reality. It never was, but I never once sort of stopped fighting for it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and it gave you your sort of goal to aim for, to keep you going.
Yeah.
Without asking a stupid question, was it the same route every day, or were you able to change it up to perhaps give you a bit of difference?
Yeah, it was mostly the same. The swim was identical. The swim was in the same pool every day. My bike course started out on a route that I thought was good.
Right.
But it turns out, you know, because people would come and join me on the bike and on the run, which I encouraged.
Yes, of course.
It turned out that once there were sort of 10 people on the bike, the route that I had originally chose was just a little too dangerous. Some of the roads had a lot of potholes and some blind corners that were quite fast on a downhill, and it wasn't safe. So a friend of mine, Paul, he was like, right, give me a day, mate, and I'll find something on the internet and find a better route. So he came up, I think it was around day 20, I want to say, found a different route for me. Might have even been earlier, day 15, which was a little flatter, way less potholes, and was safer for big groups. Because, you know, the biggest group we had was, I think, 50 riders on day 102. But even in the early days, we were having at least 10 riders on a weekend. And even though it was not an organized event, I still had a responsibility for their safety, of course, because I knew people would join me. So I had a second route. And then there was a couple of variations on that route, because some weekends where there was some roadworks, so I'd have to change it, just move, go down a different road and then turn right later, for example. So there was some slight variations, but for the most part, it was all roughly the same. And the same with the run. We had a footpath closure at one point, so I had to divert and do a little bit slightly different on the other side of the river, for example. But yeah, mostly it was the same.
It sounds like it could be a logistical nightmare at times. So, I mean, just credit enough for getting 105 days without anything. Is there any particular bit that you dislike about it, or ended up disliking about it, or did you actually grow to sort of love it?
I love the community side of it. You know, I sort of thought that mostly I'd just be doing this on my own, but actually I didn't do a single tire day on my own. I always had someone either joining me on the bike or on the run, and I didn't do any bike leg entirely alone. I did a lot of day two on my own, and there were a couple of other days where I did a couple of hours on my own, but you know, there'd always be someone who popped out on lap two because I sort of start at my old leisure center and head down and then do three about 50 kilometer, 30 mile loops.
Yeah.
And then I'd head back to the start of the run. So, you know, people would come and join me for one loop or two loops or all three loops or just loop two or just loop three, you know.
Yeah.
And because of the looped option, it did encourage people to come and join me just for a little bit. Whereas if I'd had a full 56 mile, which is the halfway point, 56 mile out and back, people would have had to commit to the whole ride.
Yes.
So, yeah, doing the looped thing was incredible, and having the community aspect around it, and there's now WhatsApp groups that have been created with all the riders and all the runners, and it's been overwhelming actually.
Well, everybody, with me here today is an inspirational young lady. She's a motor racing star. It's Janetta Junior's Holly Myatt. Hi Holly, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Brilliant, lovely. Thank you for joining us. Lovely to have you on the show. You know, we just want to talk to you about your racing, about how you got into it, and just to see perhaps how far you can go in the future. So we get to know you a little bit better. Growing up, when did you find that your love was motorsport? What age were you introduced, and did you have any inspirations?
I've always been around motorsport from quite a young age, because my dad, when he was younger, did like bits and pieces of karting and to take me to Rye House.
Okay.
You see, we used to go watch touring cars quite often.
Brilliant. So you've always sort of been in it. Obviously followed your dad through his interests. Rye House, yeah. They used to do Speedway there as well. Very good place. Obviously that was a very young age. When was it you got into karting yourself, which was your first port of call on the ladder?
I did Bambino karting at Wilton Mill.
Yes.
That just kind of taught me how to drive. I was 5 or 6 when I did that.
Okay, wow, that's very young.
And then for my 6th birthday, I got lessons going to test a hire car at Brentwood.
Okay.
And then for my 7th birthday was when I got my first car.
Oh, wow. That was a good birthday then.
Yeah.
Brilliant. You touched on Bambino karting, which probably is what it sounds like, is a youngster development centre for karting.
Kind of. It's an actual, like, series, isn't it?
Okay.
Like, you get different classes in kartings. You have Bambino, which is little.
Yes.
And then you go for cadets, and then mini-max, and then juniors and seniors.
You said you got your first kart when you were 7, tested when you were 6. So you must have been 4 or 5 when you started Bambinos. For people not into motorsport or into motorsport in that depth, it must be quite hard to understand a little person that age driving around in a car. What was it like the first time you sat in a car?
I mean, it's quite like a weird thing when you think of it. Like,
yeah.
I was 4 years old.
It's crazy.
It doesn't happen very often.
No.
But when I got my first car, because I got a Bambino, my own Bambino, for my birthday when I was 7.
Okay.
It was literally the day after that, straight away, we went down to Bayford Meadows to test.
Okay, did you? Wow. And that's the sort of place where you can just pay for a bit of track time?
Yeah, you'd share the track with other drivers as well, but you get to go out.
Wow, that must have been so exciting. I can just tell, obviously people can't see your face, but I can tell everybody that Holly is beaming just thinking about it. Brilliant. Just touching on a subject before we move on to as you progress through the ladder, I coach a lot of girls football, and even though it's getting bigger because of the Lionesses, I still find that girls are at the bottom of the totem pole. Boys do get so many opportunities. Obviously motorsport is a little bit different because it's financed. Because obviously nothing's free in motorsport. But what were the opportunities like? Did you actually find people either not taking you seriously, or did you get any sort of negative comments from people because you were a girl?
I think it definitely happens, but personally, I never really had anything.
That's good.
Like, it's definitely a male-dominated sport, but when I'm from starting it young, it was never really something I took much notice of.
No, of course not. That's a good thing to say, because obviously we don't need stuff like that around. And I suppose the best way to answer it anyway is on the track. Doesn't matter what people say to you, it's just being good on the track. And obviously you progress through the ranks to Project 1 cadets, which and then continue this. In 2018, you competed in the British Karting Championship before joining the Callum Hargrave Driver Development Programme and completed your ARCS, or ARKS, to enable you to drive anywhere in British motorsport. This was for the 2019 season. Obviously, you were at the time, 11? What a fabulous achievement. I mean, you must have been, obviously, very proud of what you achieved.
Yeah, because before that, I was literally just doing test days around Bayford Meadows. We spoke to Callum Hargrave, and it was the Bambino Karting Championship, which was run by Darren Beavers.
Okay.
I did that, for 2018. I came fifth in that, and then I moved on for 2019 to racing with Callum. From the Bambino Karting Championship, I had the opportunities to race in Spain.
Right, okay.
Flew out to Spain for a weekend.
That was just a one-off race weekend. What an experience that must have been.
Great.
Fabulous. And tell us, we said you got your ARCS, your ARKS, which obviously gives you your licence to drive, or your certificates to drive. Tell us what you have to go through to pass that. It must be quite a vigorous test, really.
I think it is just down to being, aware and, throwing flags and things like that.
Yeah.
If you're in things where you think of it as, if you know how to drive a car and you have, somewhat knowledge, you'll be alright.
Yeah. It's still processing the fact that you're only 10 or 11 at the time. So you haven't got the knowledge of just popping out and driving your car, if that makes sense. The only time you can practice is if you pay for some test time, yeah. So still amazing, you know, at your age to do that. And then we move on to 2020, which is around about COVID. So obviously things are a little bit up in the air. But you signed for Jack's motorsport team and competed well for them. Please tell us how you continued your development in racing. Was it through help from outside? Was it just your drive to get better? Was it making your body stronger or fitter? What was it you felt was the key to keep improving? Because you've improved every year.
I think the main thing to improve is just seat time. It's just getting experience and being out in a car as much as you can. Through 2020 and 2021 was the first year I started properly doing national races.
Yes.
Over the country and that, and in a team that was a bit more progressive.
Yes.
And I had better data, and it was just a bit more progressed than what I'd originally been in.
Right. So that obviously got you to read a race as well, if that makes sense, but not just how I'm doing. You know, you could go back and, as you said, you had data to look at and perhaps see where you could be a bit faster. So that helps you, I suppose, develop your mind as well, which means you become a better driver. So you then entered the Ginetta Junior Scholarship, competing with over 65 drivers, but obviously continued to flourish. I mean, 65 is a lot of cars on the track. You've got to be mindful, but obviously quick as well. So much so that you decided to enter the Michelin Ginetta Junior Championship this year with Fox Motorsport. Please let us know the difference between the Bambinos, the carts you were driving, to the actual cars that you're driving now.
I'd say they're definitely harder to drive in a way. You need to be more physically fit and you need to be a lot more focused. It's not just a strain physically, it's a massive strain mentally.
Yes.
But I wouldn't say that it's as punishing on your body as karting was.
Okay, yeah.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears. Beef and Skittles. Cider with Rosie. Common or garden. Ant and deck. Fish and chips. Mum and Dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
I get what you're saying. Just going on to those 2 years we spoke about, one with Jax and one with Fox, you said you got data, the cars, the development and your team were better, but obviously that brings more pressure on you to perform. How have you coped with that? How do you cope with that?
Obviously it's been a big transition moving into cars, and there's definitely a lot more that I need to learn.
Yeah.
But I just think of it as, I did karts for a very long time, so by the time I moved up to them, I'd had a lot of progression.
Yes.
And this is my first year in karts. I just need to give it time and just eventually progress.
That's good. Not overthink things too much. Just take it as it comes and just work on getting better.
Yeah.
How has this year actually gone for you?
It's been all right. There's definitely a lot of progress to make.
Yeah.
But it's moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
But it's been quite tough.
I can imagine that. And going back to what I said earlier about not having the ability, or not really ability, but you'll understand what I mean, to go out and drive your own car, and not something to do with talent. I presume a lot of your improvement, apart from just race day, which is probably very difficult to improve too much, comes down to testing.
Yeah.
So again, that is shaped a lot by the funding you have. You know, I know that racing is not cheap. It's enough just to get a seat, isn't it? Testing. Are there people that you've either raced with before or that are in your team or your current series who get so much more or less testing time than you? And does it make a massive difference?
There's definitely like kids on the grid, but there's definitely a massive difference between people that do a lot more testing and people that do less.
Yeah.
And you notice that in racing.
Yeah.
Like, not in all cases. In some cases, some kids are just really talented.
Yeah.
A lot of it does come down to test days and seat time. Like, the more seat time you do, the more you're going to improve.
Yeah. So how much testing have you had? We'll take money out the side of it, because obviously I know that your parents have done amazing, but have you had enough for you?
I've had a good amount of testing.
Yeah.
I think before the race season started, we underestimated things and how much testing I would need.
Right.
Into the first race, having done 8 test days in the car, whereas some kids had done 50.
Wow. General maths is just 6 times as many, isn't it? Well, it just shows you then that you're doing so well. It's a shame that nothing can be brought in by a federation that means you either have to cap the amount of test days you can have, or rather than say you all have to have the same, because obviously then that's not fair on the people that can do more, I think you could see a cap on it. I think that would be fairer, because...
I think there has been things spoken about that sort of thing.
Yeah.
There's definitely some kids that will do, like, 4 times the amount of testing that other kids. I'm quite lucky, I've done quite a large amount of testing.
Yes.
But some kids definitely haven't done anywhere near as much as others.
And without naming names or sounding arrogant, because I clearly know that you're nothing like that, I'm sure you could look at some of them, not all of them, but I'm sure you could look at some of them and think, if I'd have had the same amount of test days as them, I could be bang. Yeah. I mean, there's probably some that have had the same or not as many as you that you'd think, wow, they're really decent. And that's the trouble, isn't it? Because motorsport is quite a competitive business. There's not actually many that you get paid in, you know. I know quite well a ex-F2 driver. His name's Louis Delatraz. He drove in F2 against Alex Albon, Lando Norris, Mick Schumacher. Then he became a Formula One test driver for Haas and was their test driver when Roman Grosjean had that fireball crash. But because you don't get paid in F2 even, he now drives in the FIA Endurance, which is the only other one apart from Formula One in Europe you get properly paid. And he's the dual world champion. He's won the last 2 years. But it just shows you, doesn't it, how high you go that you don't get paid. And you think, how much money must go into these sports? And it's every person's dream as well. So it's amazing that you're doing, as you said, so well. But I like your attitude in respect of, you know, there's people out there that have tested more than you that you could probably be in front of. But you don't hold grudges. You're not bitter about it. You just crack on with it. I mean, I think that's amazing. It's a great attitude to have. So you said you've had a good year so far. Now, we've touched on testing quite a bit, but more about how it improves you and money. But you as a driver, you hear in Formula One that some drivers can go back to their mechanics and say, oh, this needs doing on this side and this is understeering and this is this. Even though you're only 15, testing for your team, if you have practice day, you know, like practice before your race days on your weekends, do you still go back to them and say, oh, this is happening on this corner, this needs doing? Or because you're 15, do they sort of take it all on board themselves?
If I feel there's something wrong, then I will speak to them and they can change it.
Yeah.
But with a genetic, there's not really much you can change.
Okay.
There's the difference between having a wet and dry setup where you just change the suspension and things, but like everything else, it's just down to like tyre pressures, brakes. That there's like probably 5 or 6 things that you can actually change.
I was saying, the main car, they're all built the same, aren't they? Yeah, everything is the same. Okay, yeah. That's cool. Now, just wanted to know, do you feel that when you're testing, you do understand it, sort of all those aspects about the car?
To a certain extent, but on test days and stuff, I don't get massively involved with the mechanic. I focus on I'll do data.
Yes.
My lap and things like that.
It's still a great start for you, though. Because obviously you're still only 15, as I said. So the fact that you're starting to understand that holds you in really good stead. It really helps you in the future. We're coming to the end of the interview, which is a shame. Could talk to you all day. I'd love to have you back on the show as well at some point. As I said, it's been amazing to chat to you. You're still amazingly young, but you're doing so well. You've got such a great attitude and positive as well. Can you give some advice, even though you're only 15, to any young girls wanting to get into motorsport?
I think now there's so many more opportunities, girls,
yeah,
motorsport, and you have things like Girls on Track. There's obviously the Formula One Academy at the moment, which is a massive thing. I think it's a bit more easy at the moment.
Yeah.
I think it's becoming more normal, and people are pushing girls to get into motorsport, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah, brilliant. And just finally, we'll squeeze this in, sorry. What are your hopes and dreams and aspirations for the future?
As of now, leading on to next year, I'm not entirely sure. There's a lot of options.
Yep.
And things to do, but mainly, overall, a massive thing would be Formula One Academy.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, for the radio, for now, Holly, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
With me today is an inspirational lady. She's captain of the England women's deaf football team. It's Claire Stanicliffe. How are you, Claire?
Okay, right, thank you.
Good. Thank you for joining me on the show. We're going to talk about your upcoming Women's World Cup in September and also a new piece of equipment that you're using while you're out there. Tell us a little bit about your football.
Yeah, so I've played football since I was about 4 years old, and I play for the England and Great Britain deaf national team for 16 years now. We're heading to the World Cup in Malaysia this September.
That must be a fabulous experience. You must be very excited.
Yeah, I mean, every tournament that we go to is like a once-in-a-lifetime experience. You can never replicate that, so I'm really excited.
Brilliant. And fabulous to branch out in football terms. I know you've been in the Olympics, but it must be amazing that women's football is getting much more attention and you're getting the opportunity to go to a World Cup.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've been so lucky to attend so many tournaments in the past. This will be my third World Cup. But for some of the new players, this is their first time. So with the hype around women's football at the moment, we're getting a lot more attention.
Fabulous. Lovely to hear. What are the team's hopes for the World Cup?
Oh, we hope to do as well as we can. I'm pretty sure that we're going to be successful. The aim will be to get to the final, but we'll have to wait and see what happens because football's a funny old game.
It surely is. The Women's World Cup at the moment is showing that. A little switch or a little change can improve. Fabulous to hear you're doing so well. Can I ask what position on the pitch you play?
Wherever I'm put, really. In the centre-back or centre-mid.
Lovely. Right in the middle where you can control things.
Yeah.
Perfect. I understand there's been a couple of areas where it's been a struggle to get to the tournament, which is in Malaysia. So a nice bit of travelling. You have to raise your own money. Tell us the amount you've had to raise and how you've gone about it.
So back in April, the FA decided not to have the England Deaf Women's Football Team anymore, which unfortunately meant some players wanted to go, but they had no one to take them. So I thought, right, we'll launch a fundraising campaign, and Great Britain Deaf Football have shown us some support and said that they will lead the team to take us out there. We had to raise £100,000 overall to take the team. And so far, we've raised £77,000. And we've had a really nice gentleman called Frank Hester, OBE, who's offered to pay for our flights, accommodation and all our kit. So we've done fantastic so far, and now hopefully that continues.
That's fabulous that you've actually managed that, and great that so many people obviously want to help. Very sad, though, that the FA decided to exclude the Women's National Deaf Team.
Yeah, but it is what it is, you know, we have to accept their decision. I'm a big believer in everything happens for a reason. There's a reason why so many people have supported us to get us out there. You know, we have a right to go out and compete and be the best we can. And it's so important for future generations that they can see that there is a deaf women's football team, especially children.
Absolutely, and brilliantly put, superbly put, is lovely. You have every right to go and compete, the same as everybody else. Yeah, so I'm so pleased that you're on your way. You said 77,000. Is that now all you need with the extra help you're getting from this kind gentleman, or do you still need the extra 23,000 to make things perfect for you?
So the whole trip to Malaysia is funded, but our fundraising campaign remains open because we're looking at long-term development now. No, we don't want to have to be doing this every tournament.
No.
Players shouldn't have that pressure on them to raise money. They should be able to just play for their country and it'd be an honour. So for us, we're still sourcing sponsorships, still sourcing donations, just for long-term development really now.
And that's fabulous. And before we move on to the other part of the interview with this new technology, which sounds amazing, we do a lot with girls football ourselves. And when you're back, it'll be nice to perhaps get in touch and see if we can help raise money for the future in any way, because we're trying to help girls get into academies. So the fact that if we can help you help the youngsters of the future, that would be amazing. But we'll leave that for now. We'll wait till you're back from the World Cup. So yeah, you're using this new piece of equipment, the XRAI Glass app, and it's supposed to help you communicate with coaches and other people. Just tell us a little bit about that, please.
Yeah, so I was lucky to have the opportunity to use the last training camp. And what you find is that every deaf person is different. So you'll have some deaf people that rely on sign language, some people that rely on a mix of lip reading and sign language, some that just rely on lip reading or their hearing aid and cochlear implant. But there will be some people that really, really struggle with all of those things because they don't know sign language or they find it really hard to lip read. And personally, I find it really difficult when I'm extremely tired or if I'm outside and it's windy, I can't pick things up.
Right.
So having an app or the glasses that display live captions in real time that's really accurate is a game changer. It just bridges that gap communication.
Fabulous. So basically someone speaks and the app shows what they said up on the screen.
Yeah, that's right. It will come up on the screen with what's being said and it will also differentiate between who's speaking.
Really? I mean, that's fabulous. It's great that it's here. It's obviously taken a long time. It's a shame people didn't think of it before. But I suppose it just gets about how we're progressing in the world. And it's fabulous. And the fact that you can use that, I guess, will help you and the team.
Yeah, definitely. I think when I look at some of the technology that we've had in the past, or even now with TV, with subtitles, they're very slow, especially live TV. And I'm always 10 seconds behind everyone else. So the fact that we've got this technology now that can do it in real time just goes to show that there's so much more that can be done in the general world, and hopefully that this will push things along.
Absolutely brilliant. Claire, what are your hopes for the future yourself, personally and on the football pitch?
Personally, I just want to keep pushing deaf women's football now. You know, we set the platform and I want to kind of help drive that. And I'm coming to the end of my playing career. I haven't got that much longer left. So I want to stay involved in a different format and just hopefully inspire younger children to just, if they have a disability, it's not going to stop them from achieving what they want to do.
Claire, that's amazing. Honestly, it's so inspirational. You'll always be an inspiration to me just because A, you're promoting women's football, B, you're trying to help youngsters, and C, it is difficult for you. You've come through obviously a lot of challenges. So I think we're coming to the end of the interview now, time wise, which is a real shame. I'd love to chat to you more. So perhaps when you're back, we can get in touch. But for now, I hope you have a brilliant World Cup. I hope the app really helps and is a game changer for the future for everybody. And I just want to say thank you so much for chatting to me. You've been a real inspiration and good luck in Malaysia.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Claire.
The station that makes you feel good.
Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living. We've been doing this for over 40 years. Every year, more and more people are living satisfying lives completely cruelty-free. Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Well, hello, everybody. This week, we're joined by a very special lady. She's a TV presenter and a children's author. It's Connie Hutt. Hi, Connie. How are you?
Hello, I'm very well, thanks, John.
Perfect. Thank you for joining us. Obviously, you've got a history of television, writing children's books, but there's a new initiative that I think you started, or you have started, and you're looking to get the message across. It's called Move Over Piggy Bank. I wonder if you could just start off by telling us a little bit about what it's about.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, this actually stems back, because you're right, I have a long career working with children and young people, but actually, few people know, I did my degree in economics at university, and as part of that, my dissertation was on young people, consumerism and spending habits. So this ties in nicely with this initiative by NatWest, which is Rooster Money, essentially. Now, have you NatWest bring out their PMI, the Pocket Money Index, and using the users of Rooster Money, which is a whopping about 125,000 people we've used to do this research, we've looked into sort of current spending patterns, current pocket money data to see what our kids are earning today and where they're getting their money from. And the findings are quite interesting, I have to say, and they're quite reflective of the modern times that we're living in.
Yeah, I can imagine. I know, obviously, doing a lot with children myself and speaking to a lot of parents, I know that some tackle it differently. Some give their children money when they need it. Some give them an allowance so it allows them the ability to budget their money. Because I don't think you notice £5 here, £10 here. So they do that. What is the current sort of state of play? Yeah, pocket money and the rising of it.
Yeah, so we found actually this year the amount of young people receiving weekly pocket money has gone down. And that could be a direct effect of the sort of pinch we're all feeling at the moment. And so that actually could have been compensated to some extent by the fact that one-off payments are on the up. So that comprises of 39% of young people's earnings. So that's money that children might get, for instance, on their birthday, a visit from the tooth fairy, essentially, your sort of one-off windfall gain. And as I was growing up, I never used to get weekly pocket money. So that used to be sort of my main source of income. I'd save money from Christmas or from birthdays, so on and so forth. And also, there were children at my school that would get entrepreneurial and sort of, you know, we had someone that used to sell snacks, you know, in a sort of undercover tuck shop, essentially at break times. I used to actually do cartooning and I used to sometimes sell comic strip sort of pictures and doodles that I had done. So that was another sort of income stream for me. If we're looking at what our findings from our survey pool, essentially, or the data pool rather, gave us, actually, there's been a huge increase in the amount of older kids tutoring younger kids, which I think is quite a nice way to earn money, because it's not only sort of making them revise and, you know, maybe relearn their times tables or whatever, but actually it's doing something good for their, you know, younger siblings, essentially. There's stuff like upcycling and selling things on, which has found its way into our data, and that's climbed 6% this year. And then there are obviously your traditional money makers like babysitting, for instance, and earnings from stuff like that has risen by 24%. But, you know, getting kids to do chores is a really good way of them earning money, because it means that it takes the pressure off having to give them pocket money, essentially. And it also means that you can get things done at a better price. So we've compiled the top five most lucrative earners.
Oh, yes.
And they are, do you want to have a guess at some of the stuff that's in there?
Or what, like chores, you mean?
Yeah, chores around the house, essentially.
Is it car washing?
Yes, you're right. No, car washing is number one.
Oh, is it?
So car washing is the biggest earner, earning £2.46, which if you think about it, you know, you couldn't get that at your local car wash, so that's good. And you're absolutely right as well. Vacuuming's in there at number three, 96 pence. That can get you, this is an average, obviously. Helping in the garden, doing laundry, and helping with the shopping are other ones that are all in there. Did you used to get pocket money, Greg?
I did. Times obviously was a lot longer ago, but I did effectively get it. But I did almost earn my money, if that makes sense. You know, I would help out around places. You try the cheeky ones like, I'll tidy my room, but I was told in no uncertain terms that should be
done anyway.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, you know what? It's funny you should say that, but we found that actually, in some instances, people are getting money for doing their homework, like it incentivizes doing homework, which I, as a parent, I'm like, that should be a given, definitely. And also, kids doing well in school subjects are sometimes getting bonuses. But, you know, those are few and far between, I think, compared to your traditional learners.
It is interesting, though, that, and I think it's a good thing. You know, it encourages children to learn about life skills as well.
Yeah, and that's the thing, you know, so kids are sort of shaping and forming in their primary years. By your secondary years, you're consolidating. By your 20s, you're so fixed that I'm always saying by your 30s, you need therapy to undo it all. And yeah. I don't know about you, John, but sometimes I can't remember things that have happened last week or even yesterday.
No,
but
I agree.
When it comes to long-term memory, there's things that you remember from, you know, back in the day. And I used to have to save up sort of money from birthdays and Christmas and so on. And I remember my very first trip abroad was to France. And I had taken my birthday money with me and I managed to lose it all on the metro. And that really, you know, scarred me for life, essentially. But it taught me the value of money, the value of budgeting and the value of saving. And essentially, you know, I'm always saying, you know, we are shaping and forming the adults of tomorrow, aren't we? So it's good that they have the right values, the right sort of skill set, the right responsibilities. And my oldest is going off to secondary next year. So with that comes a degree of independence, doesn't it? He'll be walking to school. His route will go past the shops. You know, there'll be bottles of Prime in those shops, you know, wanting to be bought. Don't get me started on Prime. That's a whole different subject. But, you know, so it is important to make sure that we're growing the adults of tomorrow in the right way.
I agree. I won't get you started on Prime because I know you asked not to, but just for an example, I just picked up something this morning. There's a garage near to me. I live in a little village, and there's a garage near me that sells it for £2.99, which I think is quite cheap. I don't buy it myself, but obviously a lot
of you know, it sells on the black market for like £13.
I know, I know, and obviously a lot of the girl footballers, 12, 13, 14, they all like it, and they're telling me how much they paid for it in the past, and I'm like, wow, well, why would you do that?
That's crazy.
So there's a garage that sells it for £2.99, and about a stone's throw from the garage has a little mini supermarket, and they're selling exactly the same product for £4.49, and even that, it's not cheap.
Around here, in the little local shopping lane, they're selling £13.
Yeah, that's terrible.
So, you know, it's crazy. But kids will pay that for it because it's endorsed by this popular YouTuber or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. There's so many fads nowadays that are buying for young people's money. You know, like the one that my son wants for his birthday with these bottles that come with these pods. Each pod is £10. And the bottle is even more just for a bottle that holds water, essentially. Yeah. And, you know, they all want these bottles, and these pods make the water sort of essentially smell of different flavours.
Oh, right, okay.
So this is the thing.
We finish off this week's show with our SLB Sports Roundup featuring golf, horse racing, cricket, tennis, motorsport, NFL and football. We start with golf. With the PGA Tour having a break, it's left to the DP World Tour for the men and the Amiga Masters from the Cannes-sur-Sûre course in Switzerland. It was won by young Swedish star Ludvig Åberg, who shot a final round of -6 to finish on -19. He beat Alexander Bjork by 2 shots, who finished on -17, with a tie for third between Conor Sine and the leader of the first 3 rounds, England's Matthew Fitzpatrick, who I'm sure will be very disappointed not to convert it into the win. He finished one further back on -16. This week it's the Irish Open from the famous K Club in County Kildare, which sees the return of Rory McIlroy to Ireland. LPGA held the Portland Classic from Columbia Edgewater in Oregon, and it was won by Chantelle Wassanen, who finished on -26, 4 shots clear of Lin Zhu, and a tied third place, further 2 back for Carlotta Siganda, Yin Roning and Gina Kim. This week it's the Kroger Queen City Championship from the Kenwood Country Club in Ohio. On to horse racing. And this week we have some good races that we've mentioned previously that are coming up. At Haydock, the Betfair Sprint Cup. We still think Shaquille will take all the beating, but look out for Kinross each way, especially if the ground is soft. Over in Leopardstown, the Irish Champion Stakes. Again, we mentioned King of Steel, but if the ground is good, look out for a good each way run for August Rodin. He hasn't become a bad horse overnight. It's not coincidental that his 2 really poor runs have been on soft ground and when travelling to England. The Matron Stakes should be Tahira's to take, and we like Al Assi in the Paddy Power Stakes. At the Curragh on Sunday, on the Flying Five, we like Highfield Princess if she takes her chance. The National Stakes and the Moyglare Stud Stakes we think will go to probably the 2 best juveniles, one of the Colts and one of the fillies, City of Troy and Yang Yang, both for Aidan O'Brien, and we expect them to be ridden and to win by Ryan Moore. A further long shot anti-post in the St Ledger. We've given you four over the past few weeks. Gregory, who flopped last time out, although we think if he runs, he will still have every chance. Continuous and Save the Last Dance from Aidan O'Brien's yard. And don't forget Desert Hero from William Haggis and in the ownership of King Charles. Cricket, the T20 series between England, which is a prep for the World Cup, sees England winning 2-1 with two to play. US Open tennis. The men, we still have Novak, Djokovic, Carlos Alcaraz and Jannik Sinner in the draw. And in the women, we've lost one finally, and it's the favourite, the world number one, Iga Swiatek, beaten by the very good Elena Ostapenko. But we still have Aryna Sabalenka, who was our choice from the start, Corey Gauff, the up-and-coming American, and the two warriors, Jessica Pegula and Ons Jabeur. On to motorsport. MotoGP, we're back this weekend with the Catalunya Grand Prix from the circuit to Barcelona. And it was a great weekend for Aprilia. Alessio Espargaro, he won the sprint race and then doubled that up with the main race victory. His teammate Maverick Vinales was second. And Jorge Martin, back from injury, was third for the Ducati Pramac Racing team. Frankie Bagnaia is still in control of the World Championship on his Ducati Lenovo. He has 260 points, with Jorge Martin now racing into second on 210. And Marco Bezzecchi, also for Ducati, the Valentino Rossi 46 team, he's third on 189. They continue in Italy this week with a San Marino Grand Prix from the Misano World Circuit, named after the late Marco Simoncelli. Well, Superbikes are back this week after their summer break with the French round. From the circuit Manicor, Alvaro Bautista for Ducati on the Aruba IT machine leads the way. British Superbikes are back on the 15th to the 17th of September with round 9 and races 25, 26, 27 from Alton Park using the international circuit. Tommy Bridewell for the Beer Monster Ducati team leads the way. However, I just want one sad note. Paul Bird, who has done so much for the sport of motorcycling in England, sadly passed away this week. He was the team principal of the Beer Monster Ducati team. So I hope Tommy Bridewell and Glen Irwin can continue as they are in a 1-2 in the championship standings and make it a great year for the late Paul Bird. Speedway GP held the British Grand Prix with round 8 from Cardiff, and it was won by Martin Vakulik, the fastest man from the tapes in the sport. He won from a brilliant performance from Jack Holder, back from injury. He could hardly hold the handlebar with one of his hands, but Jack finished second. And then Bartosz Szmarzyk, the best rider in the world, who couldn't hook it up all evening, squeezed through to the semi-finals, won the semi, missed the start badly in the final, and nearly captured second. He took third. Bartosz Szmarzyk leads the way with two rounds to go. He's on 138 points. Freddie Lindgren is second on 114. And Martin Vakulik is third on 105. Next round is round 9 with the Danish Grand Prix from Vojens in Denmark. That's on the 16th of September. NASCAR has held the Cookout Southern 500 from Darlington Raceway. It was won by Cole Larson, driving his Chevy Camaro for Team Hendrix Motorsports. Second was Tyler Reddick in his Toyota Camry for 23XI Racing. Chris Brucher was third in his Ford Mustang for RFK Racing. William Byron now leads the standings in his Chevy Camaro for Hendrix Motorsport by 1 point, 2075. Cole Larson is now second. Chevy Camaro, also Hendrix Motorsport, 2074. And Tyler Reddick, Toyota Camry 23XI Racing, is third, 14 back on 2060, as a round of 16 continues with the Hollywood Casino 400 from Kansas Speedway. IndyCar, it was a Bitnoll.com Grand Prix of Portland from Portland International Raceway, the penultimate round of the season, and it was won by Alex Palou for Chip Ganassi Racing. He beat Felix Rosenquist from the Arrows McLaren team. Third place, Scott Dixon, Chip Ganassi Racing. This meant Alex Palou won the championship and is a two-time champion for Chip Ganassi Racing. He is on an unassailable 618 points. Second place is Scott Dixon, also Chip Ganassi Racing, on 527, with two-time champion Joseph Newgard for Team Penske in third on 470. This week, it's the final race of the season with the Firestone Grand Prix of Monterey at the famous Laguna Seca track. Formula One held the Italian Grand Prix from the fast Monza, and unsurprisingly, it was won by Magic Man Max Verstappen, who made it 10 in a row, the first time ever in Formula One. He beat his teammate Sergio Perez, with third place Carlos Sainz just holding off Ferrari teammate Charles Leclerc in a race of the line to delight the Tifosi with a bronze medal. In the standings, Max Verstappen is miles clear on 364. His teammate Sergio Perez is second, 145 behind on 219. With Fernando Alonso for Aston Martin way back in third on 170, but is being closed down by the Mercedes driver Lewis Hamilton, who's just signed a new 2-year deal with the team, as has his teammate George Russell. Red Bull control the standings on 583 points, a massive 310 clear of Mercedes, and then a further 45 back to Ferrari on 228. They're back on the 17th of September with a Singapore GP from the Marina Bay Street Circuit. NFL is back this week, and week one's fixtures: the Chiefs versus the Lions, the Browns versus the Bengals, Ravens versus the Texans, Vikings versus the Bucks, Falcons versus the Panthers, Commanders versus the Cardinals, Colts versus the Jaguars, Steelers versus the 49ers, Saints versus the Titans, Broncos versus the Raiders, Patriots versus the Eagles, Seahawks versus the Rams, Chargers versus the Dolphins, Bears versus the Packers, Giants versus the Cowboys, and Jets versus the Bills. We finish off with football and week four of the Premier League. Luton 1, West Ham 2, Sheffield United 2, Everton 2, Man City 5, an Erling Haaland hat-trick, Fulham 1, Chelsea 0, Forest 1, Burnley 2, Tottenham 5, Son hat-trick, Brentford 2, Bournemouth 2, Brighton 3, Newcastle 1, an Evan Ferguson hat-trick, Crystal Palace 3, Wolves 2, Liverpool 3, Aston Villa 0, and Arsenal 3, Manchester United 1. That leaves the top four. Manchester City in first, played four, 12 points. Second, third and fourth have all got 10 points. They've played four, and that's Tottenham, Liverpool, West Ham. They're now on an international break and back on the weekend of the 16th to the 18th of September. That's our SLB Sports Roundup. Well, everyone, that's the end of another great show, the first in September. I want to say a huge thank you to our guests, the unbelievable and inspirational Sean Conway. Part one of Sean's brilliant, brilliant interview about how he'd done 105 Ironman distance triathlons in 105 days. Holly Marl, the young superstar, Ginetta Junior Championship racing driver, Claire Stanicliffe, captain of England women's deaf team who are going to the Football World Cup this month, and Connie Huck, telling us all about how to prepare and get your children ready for the value of money. I want to say thank you to you, the listeners. We really appreciate your support. And to Johan, Raffaella, and the whole team from UK Health Radio, we'll see you all next week.